Last night I had a little trouble sleeping. It seems to happen more and more these days. But woke up in the middle of the night, stayed up for a couple of hours. And one of the things I did was listen to a greatest hits album. And, you know, there's just something that's really fun about listening to music. And you know exactly where it's going from the first note. And you just sit back and enjoy all of that song. Well, I felt like we've done the greatest hits this morning. And I appreciate it, Mike, very much, because it just, you know exactly where you're going to feel and how this is going to work, and you don't have to think about doing the words or anything. And it's really nice to have that experience, and I appreciate that very, very much. I'm looking for a slide. Is it going up there? Should I go on? Okay. The slide says, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And I chose one from the 1950s because I was looking for that the origin of that thing, and so I couldn't find it. It's not credited to anybody that I could find. It goes back to the 1950s, and a lot of people have mixed reactions to this thing, and I can certainly understand that. Is it a positive or is it a negative? In one sense, it's acknowledging that mom is the central focus, especially the emotional barometer of the family. In another sense, it kind of has it's a disrespectful kind of approach. And so if you go back to the 50s, when it appears to have started, you could have said just as easily about the other parent in the family that if daddy ain't happy, ain't nobody safe. So you could really look at it from those different kind of angles. But the more I thought about it, and this is really what I want to talk about today, is, you know, it's not just mom or dad. If you've ever been in a family and a couple of the teenage adolescents aren't getting along in your family, is anybody happy? How about if the baby has colic? Anybody happy? You could just make an endless list of the fact that we aren't happy when the other people in our family aren't happy, because we're all connected. We're connected emotionally. We're connected physically. We're connected through all kinds of different ways. And so it only makes sense that when one person is out of sorts, or one person's not feeling well, or one person is struggling, there's going to be struggle across that whole group of people, that whole entity of family that's there. Family happiness is a delicate balance that can be very easily disrupted. And sometimes people think, well, does it have anything to do with the spiritual side? And certainly it does. Spiritual success, victorious living, are very much connected and tied to what goes on in our day-to-day lives. And so much of our day-to-day lives is the experience of what our family is really going through. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7 says, husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner and as heirs of you in the gracious life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers. I'm interested in that last line. Nothing will hinder your prayers. What's the writer saying to us here? Very simply, you know, these human relationships affect your spiritual being. The way your marriage is going, the way your relationship with your children is going, the way the relationships of other people in the family, when those are difficult, when those are stressed, that stress makes having a positive spiritual relationship more complicated, and it has an impact there. Now, I do want to point out, this is 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. We frequently read verse 7, but you need to go back to verse 1 and read all the way through those first six verses to be reminded of the fact that what Paul's talking about here is a reciprocal relationship that goes two ways and has two directions. It's not a single direction like it appears just in that last verse. As Moses gets ready to release the people into the promised land, Deuteronomy chapter 6, we're back there. He's going to give them some advice. We've already looked at the fact that he's warned them that he is the voice of wisdom. He's informed them that they need to build the foundation on their love of God. And I think it's very fascinating that he now comes along and says, but it's important that you learn how to do family. Because all of those things are important. And if you don't learn how to do family, it's going to be a complication in your life. And we know that just from our own personal experiences. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Six, starting in verse 6. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. Now, a lot of times when we look at this passage, and it's a useful passage, it's a very useful passage, especially as we look at the responsibility of parents and the technique to use for how to train them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. But we sometimes forget that this comes out of a whole chapter. It's not just an isolated verse here. You want to live victoriously? You want to live successfully? You're going to have to work this family thing out because it's an important part of the whole process. The other thing that's so critical here is we have a tendency to look at time, only the time that we have, our lifespan. And God looks at time in a much broader context than that. And as Moses is talking to those people, he's talking about to the people who are going to conquer the land. He's also, by extension, talking to the people who are going to live in the land hundreds of years later. He's actually talking all the way down to us about how we can establish the same kind of circumstance, the same kind of situation. I read recently about a family that saved seven generations for their children or for the descendants to go to college. Six generations put back money, passed it to the next generation, to the next generation, to the next generation, until finally there was that seventh generation that could use the money and pay for college. Well, talk about a broad perspective. There were people that those kids who went to college didn't even know. Try to think of six generations back into your own life. But they knew it would make a difference. They knew that it would change things. And they sacrificed in order to make that happen. And Moses is reminding all of us, and certainly reminding them, of the reality of that. Now you notice, well, just look at it. It's just living life. People say, well, it sounds like kind of being a fanatic to me. You know, you're going to talk about them when you sit at home. You know, talk about them when you lie down. You're going to tie them as symbols on your hands. You're going to put something on your foreheads. You're going to mark it on the door frames of all your houses. How much thunder gear do you have? I have every one of those, you know. Got the gloves and the hat and the scarf. I didn't even have to go look for them very far. There's a pendant on the wall. There's a bread spread that you sleep under. Maybe you have a thunder pillow or a beach towel or something like that. And we look at somebody and say, well, that's not fanatical. That's just being interested in a good team. Our children are not going to turn away from this. They're not going to say, oh, do we have to hear about the thunder again? Maybe they would do that. There may be some kids that would do that. But by and large, it kind of gets transferred over. I mentioned last week the DC and the Marvel thing. And to be honest with you, and I do want to be honest with you, I don't know which is which. So, but I just know how easily kids pick up on stuff. Several years ago, Kip broke his DS. And he was staying with us at the time, and Johnny wasn't going to be back for several days. And I said, Kip, maybe we could fix it. I said, there are these little tutorials on YouTube where you can watch it. It'll tell you how to take it apart. It'll tell you how to put the new screen in there. So we got the tutorial out, got the ES out. We were taking it apart. We'd done three or four steps. Then it came to a step where you were going to have to clip some wires and then put them a certain place because you were going to solder them back on later on. And Kip looked at me and said, Paul, you can't do this. this is too complicated for you. You know, let's move on and we'll buy another DS. It's just our kids learn what's important to us. They learn what our skills are. And it's not because we sit down and say, now listen, I'm good at this and I'm good at this and I'm good at that. They understand intrinsically the things we can do and the things that we can't do, the things we're interested in, the things we're not interested in. And so we don't get to that place where we say, okay, kids, today is, we're going to talk about church. You know, I'm going to tell you all the reasons that you go to church. I want you to write them all down, put them in your pocket, and keep them there and look at them, you know, every once in a while. It's not about family devos. What Moses is teaching them about is not about going to Bible class. Now, those things are great, and those things are useful. But what he's talking about is conversation spirituality on a constant basis. You're interacting on a level that's spiritual. You're talking about the spiritual things in your life. You're talking even subconsciously about the way you deal with the issues of your life. And as we do that, our kids pick up on who we are and what really moves us in a certain direction. We show our kids, we show our family members, we show anybody who's watching how we experience victorious living. And if we do that differently than the world, then there's notice that's taken of it. It's not always about being successful. It's not always about being up. It's not always about being positive. It's about being faithful and using your spiritual resources to solve the crises that come up in life. You may remember the book, I Remember Mama. I may have mentioned this before, but one of the things that's interesting in that little book is it's an immigrant family, but they have no money. They just constantly are dealing with different financial crises. Mama kind of fibs about things, and she tells the family that she has a bank account. She could go down to the bank and get money out of the bank, but every time something comes up, she says, why don't we just try to solve it without a trip to the bank? You know, maybe we could all do a little extra work, or maybe we could cut out here or there or whatever. And so these kids grow up not knowing that Mama doesn't really have a bank account, but they are greatly, greatly encouraged by her confidence. It makes such a difference to them. And sometimes we want to do what Mama does with our spiritual bank account. We want to pretend that there's one down there at the church that we could get out if we really had to. But our kids know different. They want to see if it's working, if we're using it in our day-to-day lives. I've shared with you before, about 25 years ago, we had a little thing at our house, and there were some kids from Terry's class who were over there, and one of the little boys who was there, he was about 10 years old, and he was a missionary's child, and they were actually back in the United States for a year. And so he went to school, and Terry taught him, and he'd come with the group that day. And he and I were sitting at a picnic table, and we were talking about him being a missionary and what it was like being in this other country. He lived in his parents worked in an African country, and he was just sharing what goes on in his life. And he explained to me that on the day that their dad got paid, that people would come to their house and ask for money because they knew the day that the money would come. And the dad would always help in some ways, always share some money. And the little boy said, and sometimes my dad gives it all away. And I just like, you know, this lump goes in my throat. I said, well, what do you do when your dad gives it all away? He looked at me and he said, we pray. Like, don't you know about prayer? This is a 10-year-old kid giving me a lesson on how to be a prayer warrior. And it was an impressive lesson. It really was for the child and for the family. Now, to upgrade, to advance that story just a little bit, that kid is now in his middle 30s. And I don't know him on a deep, deep, deep personal level. But from what I see, he's just exactly what you thought he would be 25 years later. There's other kids in the family, and they are too. Why? You know, their parents modeled for them victorious living. They modeled for them the kind of things that were going to serve the kids well in spiritual life. And they've been very, very successful because of that. It's a spiritual journey. We're on our own personal spiritual journeys, but we're also on a spiritual journey with the other people around us, the people in our biological families, the people in our spiritual family as well. We're all in this together, and we all help each other. And there are times when there are crises, when somebody says, boy, I bet that's overwhelming. Maybe that's the thing you need to hear at that moment. Somebody to share with you how much it hurts. But somebody else to offer some a shoulder to cry on, or just some spiritual resource, some willingness to listen. Those various kinds of things, because we're all in that journey together, makes it work. A couple of things. One is that when you create a family situation that's positive and working, and I'm not saying it's working constantly, because families are families. They're made up of people, and we have our highs and lows and our ups and downs and our successes and failures, and we have to deal with the reality of that. But we also have to deal with the fact that those relationships are extremely fragile. Got to be protected at all costs. There are dads who would give their own life to protect their family. They'd be the first one to meet the danger, the threat. And that's a positive thing. But we also have to protect our family from other sources and other entry points, whether that might be the television or the casual conversations or the people who visit at our home. Families are so easily broken. When we were in Houston, I had a coworker who said from the pulpit that when he met his daughter-in-law, he didn't think she was attractive, but that over time, he came to realize how attractive she was. Now, she was also a member of the congregation and present that morning. It was not a good thing to say. For the next couple of weeks, he tried to backtrack and made it worse and worse and worse. And the terrible part about it is, just like the little boy I told you about earlier, it's still in that family. It's still a problem. It didn't need to be a problem. There was no reason to say it. But he said it, and he never could change it. And the relationships aren't the same since he did. We have to be so careful. We can say things that we think are funny. We can say things that we think other people will respond to in a way that they don't. And there are just so many things that are better left unsaid that we don't have to say. We don't have to threaten the fragility of our families. You may be sitting there this morning thinking, well, my family isn't exactly what I want it to be. I doubt if there's anybody here who's saying that it is. All of our families have weaknesses. And you may even be looking at this point in time and feeling in your heart concerns about adult children. Don't give up on them. Don't give up on them. Don't quit praying for them. In Luke chapter 18, verse 1, it says, then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. Keep praying. Keep praying. According to psychology, there are two times in people's lives when they are the most sensitive to spiritual change, and that is the birth of a child and the birth of the death of a loved one. And if you look at your own experience, you can probably relate to that. And because of what I do, I have so many opportunities to visit with people who are talking about how they want their life to be different after especially losing someone who's very close to them. I want to change. I want to be better. Doesn't always have the impact that they want, but frequently it does. And I'm always wishing that the person could have seen that. The person could have known that. And the reality of that is, even at the end of our own lives, if we look around and there are people that we love who are not yet in the kind of relationship where we would like for them to be with God, that doesn't mean it's going to happen. That doesn't mean it's not going to happen. This story isn't finished. We don't get to see all of the story. If you do get to see it, be the prodigal son's dad. I love reading that story. One of the reasons I do is because I compare it to my own earthly father. I think my dad would have been out on the road looking for me, but when he saw me, he would have gone and sat in a chair. He would have wanted me to come in and grovel for a while before he said, "I'll take you back." God don't like that at all. He says, I see you. I run up to you. I hug you. I forgive you before you even ask. I restore you to the place that you are. And there are people in our families, when our families kind of break down, that sometimes make the move back to us, whether it be children or other people we're associated with. And we so easily can say, well, but I think you've really earned your forgiveness. The image of God as the father of the prodigal son is not that way. And we can have that same kind of heart. I hope that you're looking at victorious living. I hope that you're saying, that's something that I want in my life. And I hope that as you think that through, that you remember that your relationships are critical to that process. And again, I go back to the fact that all of our relationships are not perfect, but they can be better. And we can deal with them in a more spiritual way. Everybody can grow from that standpoint. I want to end by sharing a family story. When Terry's grandfather moved to the United States from Germany back at the early part of the 20th century, he and his mom and dad, and there were seven boys. And once they settled in Central Texas, a local minister came by and wanted to study with them. And the grandfather, Terry's great-grandfather, was very, very taken back by the way this man wanted to study. This man didn't want to tell him what he believed. This man didn't tell him what somebody else had decided. This man wanted to open the Bible and study together. And he loved that. The next Sunday, he and his wife said to the seven boys, "Get in the wagon, we're going to church." And they studied, and they all became Christians. And they changed their life very strongly there. There's a little church in Central Texas that those seven boys financed and built themselves. Not a massive church. It's a little church. It reminds you a lot of the Church at Harmony. And about the only thing that happens in that church anymore is for there to be weddings, because it's a great place to have a small wedding. But there's no way to measure the impact that this one guy had through this large family. He had something very basic to share. He shared the word, and then the parents did what's done here and talked about it and in various places in life and encouraged it and developed it and helped it strengthen and grow. And so then you have these multiple people that are sharing God's word. Now, the scary part of that is, as you look at this family, it went through a very intense period of being very strong. And then, like a lot of our extended families, that began to dwindle away just a bit. We have a strong responsibility. We have a strong calling from God. God says, I want the very best for you, as I've been pointing out to each and every time. And the way you do that is you do family my way, and you have the best chance of this victorious life that we're looking for. Would you pray with me? Dear God, I thank you for your plans for us. I thank you that your plans are to prosper us. We also know that there are things that Satan brings into our lives that are difficult to manage and difficult to defeat, and we ask for your strength there. Father, give us purpose and give us commitment as we interact with these precious souls who are part of our biological families. and also those beyond them who are the part of our spiritual family. Help us to make that strong. Help us to make that as good as it could possibly be. Help us to protect it in every way that we possibly can. Father, we pray this through your Son. Amen. Again, we extend God's invitation. If you need to respond to that, we'd encourage you to make your way to the front while we sing this song together.